Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our statist enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, y'all, Scott Horton Show, scotthorton.org for the archives, more than 4,000 interviews now going back to 2003, and sign up for the podcast feed there, scotthorton.org. Follow me on Twitter, at Scott Horton Show. All right, introducing Zaid Jilani, now at The Intercept, and co-author of this brand new breaking news piece with Lee Fang, Hacked Emails Reveal NATO General Plotting Against Obama on Russia Policy. Welcome to the show, Zaid. How are you doing?
Great, Scott. It's great to be here.
Very good to have you here. Hey, well, attempted plotting at least. First of all, I guess, a little bit of background. We're talking about, Philip Breedlove, General, Breedlove of the U.S. Air Force, who's Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, until very recently, as you say here. And his Gmail account was hacked, by somebody, and they were posted on a new website called DC Leaks. First of all, I guess, tell us about DC Leaks, what you know about them.
Sure. We don't necessarily know a whole lot about the site. It just booted up very recently, within the last week or two. And basically, they describe themselves as a collection of hacktivists, you know, meaning that they're folks who are basically siphoning leaks or soliciting leaks from people through various methods, one of them which would be email phishing or hacking. Mm-hmm. And basically what they're doing is they're trying to collect leaks based on various stakeholders and decision makers. So that ranges from people in political parties or campaigns to sitting politicians and government agencies to, as in this case, generals and military folks. Mm-hmm.
Well, and of course, Breedlove is or at least was extremely important in the last couple of years' events in Eastern Europe there. And then now, I guess importantly, as you write in your article here, you guys confirm that at least some of these emails absolutely are legitimate because you talked to the recipients of them, and they even told you that Breedlove had told them that, oh, man, my Gmail got hacked. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, this is something I guess your listeners should be wary of, is that, you know, it's great to turn on two-step authentication and take a number of other steps to protect your information, because in the day and age that we live today, it's very easy, actually, for people to hack into your personal data and your information. And as you can see, it even happens to someone who's head of the European Command of NATO.
Right. Well, I was just talking on Twitter with China Hand, was saying, what is the deal with these people using Gmail? And I guess it's just, you know, they got that big of a head. When you're the supreme allied commander of anything, you think you're invulnerable, right?
Well, I think part of the reason also is that I guess the logic is a similar logic to why did Hillary Clinton use, you know, a private email address and a private server, right? I think part of their logic was that, you know, it does give you at least vis-a-vis the government and Open Records Request and Freedom of Information Act, it gives you more sort of secrecy from them, right? You know, you can say you're doing this on your own time, private. It's not subject to any kind of open records law or any kind of FOIA law. But the problem is that private email addresses and private servers and private addresses that have much more of an ability to be hacked by other people, right? You know, the government has very tough security on its own email communications, but Gmail certainly doesn't, right? And it really is pretty amusing to see a general not realize that and how he's doing his communications. I mean, maybe that itself should start to make people question some of the folks in power and sort of their practices and their utter lack of knowledge of what actually is a good idea to do here.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense if he's going to be insubordinate to use some kind of different email. But Gmail? Really? I mean, they even sell that as, yes, we do scan the text of everything you write in order to pitch proper ads to you and everything like that. I mean, anyway, there's just not even the slightest presumption of privacy there. A homebrew server in your bathroom, at least there's a little bit of a false sense of security in that, I guess. But anyway. All right, so now these emails start with he's writing to Colin Powell saying, help me do what now exactly?
So basically, Breedlove was head of the European Command of NATO over the past few years. He actually just, his official day of retirement actually is today, but he had handed, I believe he had handed over powers, you know, over the last month or month and a half. And basically what he was doing is when we had the situation in Crimea and when we had Russians, you know, start to use military force there following the coup in Ukraine, Breedlove's immediate reaction was that we need to start sending lethal arms to Ukraine, is that we need to start basically helping them prep for like a full-on war against Russia. And what these emails that were hacked and posted on DC League show and what we reported on it, and we also, by the way, verified that they were true by emailing the people who were involved. You know, what they show is that he was meeting, at least in his
Stop there for a second. You got confirmation from everybody involved? Wesley Clark and Colin Powell and the rest?
Not, you know, we didn't directly talk to Breedlove. Powell did confirm, one of the gentlemen that he was talking to did confirm.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize Powell had confirmed as well. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, Powell had confirmed. And actually, by the way, I believe one of the gentlemen involved actually even said he had already contacted the U.S. federal government to start investigating the hack because he was so upset by the hack. But again, like, you know, if you don't follow basic email security practices, you know, you're very vulnerable to these things. And unfortunately, even heavy decision makers don't realize that. But yeah, basically, Breedlove was seeking the counsel of high level sort of foreign policy people, including former Secretary of State, Colin Powell, former NATO Supreme Commander, Wesley Clark, and basically asking them, hey, how do I overcome this resistance in the White House? The White House is telling us we shouldn't be starting another war. You know, they view us as a threat to that. They're de-emphasizing all this. And, you know, how do I do that? And basically, he was soliciting advice from all these people about what sort of weapons should be brought to Ukraine. As you may know, your listeners may know, there has been sort of a de facto ban on lethal aid to the Ukrainian government. Not really a ban, but like they were very hesitant to give lethal aid. There are many in Congress who wanted to give lethal aid to Ukraine in sort of the conflict with Russia. But primarily our aid to Ukraine has been, you know, I don't know, sleeping bags or surveillance equipment or intelligence or things like that.
Well,
right?
Trucks, yeah, trucks,
rather
but
than
not
like,
tanks.
You know, missiles, yeah. And tanks and bombers. But Wesley Clark, and you can please, I encourage your listeners to go and read the story. But Wesley Clark was telling, you know, was drawing up a Christmas list of weapons that they need to be getting out there. And you'll see that, you know, the various people involved have been to Ukraine and talked to Ukraine. You know, it sounded almost as if they had sort of embedded with the Ukrainian government and were being like their lawyers, right, for their case for war. And they were just, you know, they were sitting there and they were complaining that the administration was not as eager to do that. Well, not all the administration. I should say they were complaining about the White House, but they also had sent emails to Victoria Nuland, you know, State Department, and talking about how they were finding some friendly ears in the State Department, which I think is one of the paradoxes of the Obama years, is that the State Department has become more militaristic than the Secretary of Defense or the Defense Department or the White House. Which, you know, also it bodes ill for the next president, given that, you know, Hillary Clinton has been, of course, has a coterie of folks at the State Department who I think she inculcated to have that point of view. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I encourage everyone to go on our site and read the story, because I think what it presents is how you see a sort of an intergovernmental dispute, you know, take place, and how you see somebody who does have a case for, you know, wanting to basically ramp up a war with Russia, how they organize that case, how they compile evidence. I mean, there were points where the general Breedlove was like finding things on social media, right, and sending them around and saying maybe we could use this, right, you know, as part of our case. Right? It was incredibly unsophisticated beyond maybe what you would imagine someone of his position right. would be doing. But the goal was clear. The goal was that he wanted the United States to be militarily involved in boosting up and supplying Ukraine so it can fight Russia, which is something that's some in the White House and the president were not very eager to be doing, and which frustrated this group of folks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I know you can't answer this, but it raises the question. It should be an obvious, absolutely yes, although I kind of doubt it. But did the NSA or the FBI warn the president that he had this level of insubordination going on over at NATO command in Europe? I mean, again, we're not talking about picking a fight with whatever, pago or whatever. We're talking about picking a fight with Russia, who actually have even more H-bombs than we do.
Right. Well, you know, and obviously I don't know the extent to which they would have known. But I do know that obviously he used personal communications to do all this. And everyone he was talking to was also in there using personal communications, personal capacity. So it's impossible sort of to say like what at least from the information that we had, like what the administration or what like the Obama White House understood that he was doing this, that he was sort of basically recruiting Democratic and Republican foreign policy elites to try to do this. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting. He has Breedlove has actually made some public remarks recently. And he has, you know, it's beating a lot of the same drum, talking about, you know, quote unquote Russian aggression, talking about the need for a stronger NATO, saying the Russians represent, you know, respect and represent strength and unity. He did make some remarks saying something like, we have to communicate more to Russia, like we should start opening up, you know, more lines of communication with them, which maybe represents somewhat of a shift in his thinking. But essentially, he's been beating the same drum. And I think that, you know, there are a lot of folks, particularly in Congress. I mean, over the years, Breedlove had also testified before Congress. And there's like, the, you know, the John McCain's and Lindsey Graham's of the world who really did want us to see, like, get, you know, potentially get into a hot war with Ukraine, with Russia. And I think, you know, this was a guy who had these people's ears. And I doubt that, you know, even after this, that we would see him sort of like not try to stay in the game and influence things, especially as, you know, there will be another administration composed and they will need advisors and people at various levels in the administration, in the NSC, State Department, Pentagon. And, right. You know, I think that folks like this do tend to stick around because they believe in what they're doing. I mean, what's very clear from here is that in his view, he was fighting an uphill battle against the White House on this, and he was working very hard to make his case and recruit allies to do that. And I think that level of sort of infighting within people who really are supposed to work for us, I mean, in theory, the president is supposed to control, you know, the government. People will have their dissent, they'll have, you know, so on and so forth, but you don't really expect to see them like organizing almost like a sort of campaign, right? To bring folks together like this to change the policy. And I think that the level of detail you see here in doing that, I think, is what's remarkable.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, too, to see, you know, the same weakness that has Obama letting these people get away with this. The fact that Victoria Nuland ever even worked for him in the first place, much less survived being caught red-handed plotting a coup that led to this war in the first place and all of the rest of that. It's sort of, thankfully, the same weakness that keeps him from doing something really horrible and stupid here. If Hillary Clinton was in this position, she would be, her first priority would be how to look and act tough. How to make Breedlove respect me for being just as tough as him would be her entire mindset. And we'd all be dead.
Well, there's a Mark Landler, who's a reporter at New York Times. He actually has a book about this called Alter Egos, and he actually has a lot of good information and scoops on sort of Hillary Clinton's decision making at the State Department. And, you know, obviously he's painting a picture with incomplete facts. He doesn't have the whole story on everything. But the basic picture that he paints is that generally Hillary Clinton's State Department was offering that posture. And I think it's something that you've seen maintained under Kerry's State Department, in that you saw very recently, many, many people at the State Department basically advocating through a dissent channel for more or less a no-fly zone, or at least some sort of military escalation against Syria's government.
And what's the name of that thing again?
Oh, the book is called Alter Egos.
Okay, go
ahead. It's basically about the foreign policy discord between the Obama folks and the Hillary folks while she was in the government and while they were both in the government.
Very good.
Yeah, and he's written a couple of adaptations of that book in terms of long form articles in the New York Times, which is what I've read. I haven't read the full book, so, but it has good information. And I think that it's much more thorough. You know, for example, anytime that there was sort of a foreign policy crossroads to be reached, she would tend to be the one siding towards more military engagement and more military ramp up. I mean, it was almost unfailing. I don't know if there was a counterexample to that, you know, where Obama was for more military engagement and she was for less. I mean, at least every detail that I know shows, you know, the reverse. So,
man, unreal. And then now, can you elaborate to me a little bit about this Pakistani deal that at least supposedly, hopefully, never happened?
Yeah, I mean, it's bizarre. You know, it's the sort of thing that you imagine you would read in like a spy novel or something. Is, oh, a bunch of folks want to start arming some friendly country, but they don't have a direct way to do it, so they reach out to another country to act as a go-between. Which is basically that, you know, Breedlove had been in contact with someone, his name is Phil Carber, who through the years has had various positions in sort of like the defense community. Today he's president of the Potomac Foundation, which is basically like national security consulting. If there's like, I guess that'd be an easy way to describe it. He was an advisor to Thatcher. and advised various other people in NATO. And he also worked in the defense industry, of course. You know, he had that for over 20 years. And basically, yeah, I mean, he had floated a deal that he had made with the Pakistanis saying that, hey, Pakistan can act as a go-between to deliver weapons. You know, it's a well-armed country, a country that spends a considerable amount of money on its military, primarily due to a rift with India. And, you know, that included, like, portable, like, basically rocket launchers, anti-tank weapons. But even he noted that, hey, this deal that we're sort of uncovering, you know, Pakistan doesn't want to do it unless the actual U.S. government, not, you know, a bunch of, not a general and some, you know, academics and some other, you know, lackeys that he sort of, you know, organized, you know, they didn't want to do it without Obama's approval. And we actually, you know, we had reached out to Carver, and Carver told us that, yeah, this deal never happened. But it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating the level to which these folks tried to sort of organize the arming of Ukraine behind Obama's back, right? To go to this level of things. Even if it didn't end up working out, the fact that they would just be even feel like it's okay to consider these things and talk about doing these things is pretty amazing.
Right. Is it Powell that says, well, you know, considering Obama, given Obama's instruction to you to not start a war, this may be a tough sell. Oh, that's all.
Well, if you remember, I mean, obviously Powell played a very, very bad role in the Iraq War, and I think that's something that'll be a stain on him forever. But
both Iraq wars.
No, yeah, definitely. It's definitely.
I mean, two out of four of them. But anyway, yeah, go ahead.
And but at the same time, you have to remember, I think it was around the time of the Russia-Georgia War, Powell was actually somewhat cautious. You know, he was saying like, yeah, why exactly do we have NATO, you know, in that area? You know, why, you know, he takes a more pragmatic view towards Russia generally, I think, is a good way to describe him. And I'm sure, you know, his former chief of staff, Lawrence Wilkerson, tends to be definitely in the realist camp of things and generally is not favoring of these military ramp-ups and escalations. And I think that, you know, Powell probably had the same approach here, although Powell did end up connecting it with a few other folks who didn't have that approach. But, you know, I mean, I don't think that someone of Powell's ideology would be too eager actually to get involved militarily here. It's funny, you saw an entirely different approach from Wesley Clark, who he also had been in touch with, mm-hmm. And you saw Clark started, you know, putting up, like I said, a Christmas wish list of basically all the sort of different armaments they should be offering to Ukraine. And a lot of people don't know this, but there's actually they might actually be on antiwar.com or, you know, a few websites like that. But Clark actually almost started a war with Russia during the Kosovo conflict. I believe there was like some Russian units that had taken a building or something like that.
It's the pristine airport. Yeah.
Right. The airport. Right. And Clark basically wanted to go in there and kick him out with like U.S. military power, which I, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't recall that ever happening. Even like throughout the Cold War was like, you know, direct intentional military engagement between Russia and the United States. But you know,
not
it didn't
between
happen,
ground
right?
troops anyway. Yeah.
Right. I mean, there may have been like air interdictions or something, right? But it wasn't like, you know, what you imagine like a ground war would be. But that would have basically started that, right? And so this is the man of obviously the good general wants to tap for advice on how to do this, and he seems very, very eager. I mean, it's yeah.
Well, and in that anecdote, it was actually he was the supreme commander of NATO himself at the time, and it was the British general below him who was insubordinate in the good way and said, I refuse to carry out your order. No, sir, I'm not going to start World War III for you. Screw you, Clark. And they just didn't do it.
Yeah, no. Clark is an incredible person. And by the way, Clark had also called...
And by the way, apparently he hadn't checked with Bill Clinton to say, hey, is it okay if I start a ground war with Russia in Kosovo right now? He was just going to go ahead and do it himself.
No, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. And the other thing is that Clark has been in the news more recently, sort of talking about, you know, something up to the level of like internment camps for radicalized American Muslims. And like, you know, the idea just seems like, you know, it seems like Clark has really gone off the deep end. I mean, I think for a long time he had a level of respect. You know, he ran for president. He was viewed sort of as, you know, a pragmatic military person. It's not, you know, terribly insane. But, at the end of the day, I think that his pattern of actual behavior, whether it be that his conduct, obviously, Serbia, Kosovo, or his conduct, you know, here in these emails that we're releasing, the man doesn't seem to have a whole lot of restraint or appreciation for the idea of what war entails or what, you know.
Well, and remember that New York Times piece, won the Pulitzer, I don't know, 8-10 years ago now, about all of Rumsfeld's generals in the media. Remember that? By, I'm sorry, I can't remember the
yeah, I don't remember who wrote it either.
But anyway, he's in there, and he's the worst one. He's the one who always sold himself, you know, in, say, 05, 06, descent against Iraq War 2 years, as being, you know, anti-war and anti-Bush for the way this war is being carried out. But his answer was always, we need more armored personnel carriers. We need a bigger escalation. And it turned out he was just an armored personnel carrier salesman working directly for, I forget if it was Raytheon or whoever it was that was cranking out the new MRAPs and whatever other Bradley. Oh, I guess it was the Bradleys especially. And he was just getting rid of product. Cashing
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, you know, one of the most important things. I mean, there's also, there's incidences like this pop up all the time. Like, for example, you might remember last year there was this blimp, this gigantic blimp the Pentagon had created. And it's not really dangerous. It's just ridiculous that they, like, made this gigantic blimp that's supposed to be, like, for missile defense and, like, you know, for detecting that sort of threat to the United States, like on the Atlantic, you know, coast and so on and so forth. And we saw that, you know, one of those giant blimps tear loose from Maryland and like go across the entire country, like tearing stuff up with its tethering. And it, I think it landed in rural Pennsylvania. The general who had pushed for that project and gotten that project, you know, saved it actually from removal by the military. The military wanted to kill the project. The general who did that, he waited about 5 months before he joined the board of Raytheon, which was like the primary contractor which subcontracted out the work for that blimp. And like, you know, it's incredibly shameless in many respects. And it's almost become like a routine thing. Like maybe 50 or 60 years ago, this would have been viewed as very uncouth. Like, you know, you're not, you shouldn't be doing that kind of thing. It's just, it looks terrible. But now, unfortunately, now I think to a large extent has become the norm.
Yep. All right. Well, that's Zay Jelani. Writing at The Intercept, hacked emails reveal NATO general plotting against Obama on Russia policy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Scott.
All right, y'all, and that's the Scott Horton Show. Check out the archives, 4,000 of them, at scotthorton.org. Sign up for the podcast feed there. Help support at scotthorton.org/donate. And follow me on Twitter, at Scott Horton Show. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.
President John F. Kennedy was assassinated more than 50 years ago. Questions still persist to this day. Why did the Secret Service threaten deadly force against the Dallas Medical Examiner? Why did a Navy official testify that the official autopsy photographs were not the ones she developed during the weekend of the assassination? Explore these questions and more in Jacob Hornberger's best-selling ebook, The Kennedy Autopsy, published by the Future of Freedom Foundation. Buy it today for only $2.99 on Amazon.com. The Kennedy Autopsy by Jacob Hornberger.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. And they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.